It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to have some of the cast members and writers of the show Haymarket, The Anarchist Songbook, The Edge Theater. May, of course, is a big month for labor, the Haymarket riot. This is the 130th anniversary. And it's appropriate to have this conversation we're going to have with them today, just with President Obama expanding overtime rules, changing labor laws to essentially give overtime to anyone who makes $47,000 or less. There you go. So we'll talk with the writers and performers of that play. And also coming up later, Character Flaws, which is the best in stand-up, characters, performance, improv, sketch comedy. And we'll have some of that tonight after 10 o'clock. Well, right now, my guest tonight at the big table is Chicago author Stacey Ballas. Ballas put out a new novel called Wedding Girl. This is Stacey's ninth novel. Past books include Off the Menu, Out to Lunch, and Recipe for Disaster. If you can't tell from the titles, Stacey centers her work around foodie culture and restaurants and cooking because that's what she's into when she's not writing novels. But Stacey's work is much more than writing about food. The Wedding Girl is romantic, it's heartfelt, and it's a tale of giving up on your dreams so you can start new ones. Stacey Ballas is a Chicago writer, and before that was the director of education at the Goodman Theater, and she's my guest tonight at the big table. Stacey, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
All right, so I really like this, and the first thing I came in and I told Pete today, I said, I hope this book is optioned for a movie.
Like
It's got everything that you need for a story. So if it hasn't been optioned, my producer, Pete Zimmerman, and I be your agents.
Absolutely. I would love that. That would be great. It hasn't been optioned yet, but okay. I always say yet.
You always say yet.
I always say yet. You never know.
Well, it's amazing to me that you're able to do, and we're going to talk about that, 9 novels in the course of, 10 years? A little bit longer.
A little bit longer, yeah.
But this book I want to talk about because I said in the intro, it's a tale of giving up on your dreams so you can start new ones. Tell me about the character Sunshine, Sophie, Summer, Karma Bernstein.
Well, Sophie, as she prefers to be known, is a Chicago fine dining pastry chef, and she has a very specific dream for her life, which is super traditional. You find the right guy, you have the right kind of wedding, you get married, you have a very prestigious career, and that's what she's looking at, in part because she's rebelling against her very hippy-dippy, never-been-married parents. Everything skips a generation. So she wants that stability and that tradition, and she thinks that she's found it. She's working in a Michelin star restaurant as the pastry chef. She's engaged to the sommelier, who is everything you could think you would want, a handsome trust fund guy. And she plans what's going to be the culinary wedding
of the year.
Well, and in part she does it because the two of them are going to open their own restaurant. So it's a combination of I have parents who have never been married. I'm going to have the most traditional, perfect wedding ever. But also, all the people that are going to come are going to be the elite culinary people, and they're going to get a sense of what it is we're going to do when we branch out and open our own space.
And this all happens in the first 5 pages.
In the first 5 pages. And she gets epically left at the altar and publicly shamed and goes into a death spiral in her career and in her life, and she ends up having to move in with her 80-some-year-old grandmother back in the old neighborhood to put her life back together.
Right, and that's really the heart and soul of this book. I mean, the beginning plays to all the sort of things we know about the culinary world and all the people that are helping her out, and it's this beautiful kind of opulent sort of wedding that she's going to put on. But the book is really about getting back to your roots. She goes to work in a bakery that's a sort of an old school bakery that she grew up with, to help the old man out, and sort of finds herself.
Exactly. Well, and I think for me, I always say people are only interesting or at their most interesting when they're out of their comfort zone and when they're challenged by life. And so for her, she had a very clear picture from a very young age of this life that she thought she needed to live. And she's been very driven to get there. And when it all implodes, she has to really figure out who she is, mm-hmm. Professionally and personally and romantically. And if I was dreaming, what happens if I dream the wrong dream for my whole life now? What am I left with? And I really think that's when people show you what they're made of. And that's what's interesting. I mean, it would be really hard to write a book where someone makes all the right decisions. It would be very short.
Right.
So
and there's something great about sort of having the wrong decisions sort of play out for you, meaning that, you know, Dexter left her. She wasn't there. You know, right. She wouldn't have made that. She wouldn't have found herself.
Correct.
If it all worked out perfectly.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I think that how you respond when life sends you a challenge or a failure is that tests the mettle of who you are. And I'm a big believer that the universe knows what it is you need even when you don't. And sometimes you need a great big kick in the pants to get going down the right path because you've been heading down a different path. So I'm, you know, and I think that's what's interesting about people in general.
Yeah.
You know, you can say that about any of your friends, that someone gets fired and they find the career that they actually probably could have or should have been in all along, but they needed that epic moment of failure to push them in the right direction.
As a novelist, I mean, especially 9 novels through, but how much is Sophie you in this? How much, I mean, not, I, obviously with some of the sort of big character swipes, this has nothing to do with your life, obviously,
right.
but when we talk about her, you know, being a pastry chef or, you know, going back to the old neighborhood, the kind of things that connect her to Chicago. How much of you do you inject into this kind of thing?
Well, I think what you'll find is that I'm everywhere in my books and I'm nowhere specific. So the Chicago thing, I'm a 5th generation Northsider. I grew up in the city. So Chicago is always going to be another character in my books. I live to eat and cook and see how other people cook and eat. So that's always going to be another character in the books. I think anytime you hear any character in one of my books promoting something philosophical, when Sophie talks about, you know, I need to let go of a dream so I can dream a new dream, or the advice that her grandmother gives her, those are the most me. I think I just want everybody to be happy and live a good life because I try to be happy and live a good life. And if I can with my books, if I can make you laugh, if I can keep you company, but if there's little moments where you hear something that feels like actual life advice that resonates with you, mm-hmm. that's me reaching out through the page to say, I'm actually saying that to you. And sometimes it's when her friends are giving her a little tough love, and sometimes when her grandmother's doing it with, you know, adoration or with food, and sometimes it's when she reaches into her own mind and says, actually, I'm being an idiot right now, and I need to stop that.
Okay, so let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'd love to talk to you about the writing a romance novel. And it's not in the traditional sense of romance novels we know. There's no pirates. There's no flowing shirts, things
not
like
yet.
That. But how, as a novelist and as a writer, sort of developing sort of a romantic arc. And how you do that, especially when you're writing 9 novels. Stacey Ballas is my guest tonight. The novel is Wedding Girl. It's out now. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Stacey Ballas. Her new novel, Wedding Girl, is out now. Just came out this month. Stacey, this is her 9th novel. When I say this should be the kind of big table thing or interview where you're like, it's been a great career. 9 novels. I mean, it's amazing that you're able to write this be so prolific with this kind of material, because it's difficult. I mean, I hesitate to call it a romance novel,
right?
Because it's, and there's a category for that. The category, we'll talk about categories, but categories for everything.
There's categories for everything.
There is a skill and there is an art to writing a romantic arc.
Yes.
And you have that down. It doesn't feel trite. It doesn't feel cliche. It feels like, it feels real.
Thank you.
So talk about how you do that. I mean, there have to have been missteps in the 9 novels, but
oh, yeah.
What makes a great romantic arc?
Well, I mean, I think for me, when you're writing, you want to read about a relationship that makes sense to you. So whether that's two people that have had similar struggles separately and come together and that their struggles make them stronger as a unit, or whether it's people that have been in really bad relationships and now they're ready for a really great relationship. Those are what people, you know, people want to read aspirational stuff. So for me, I want the romantic arc of my books, and there is almost always one. While it's not at the center of the book, it's a part of how you get to know the heroine. And it's a part of how you watch her sort of re-examine her life. And the only thing that can make that interesting is if you give her something that isn't one of those cliche trite. I mean, right. you want to meet cute. it's just the nature of the beast. But you want to meet cute that feels realistic. So if you're reading something that's aspirational for yourself, if you're a single person, you want to believe that it's possible to meet someone in an organic way that isn't necessarily about, you know, only the options that we have now, which are fix-ups and online or at work, right, whatever. Right. Like, you want to believe that it's possible to randomly meet someone who's perfect for you.
Who comes in and tastes your new
exactly
pastries.
Exactly. You want to believe that the two people are making each other better. That, to me, is really key. You want to think that they're two complete people making a greater whole. I always say there's none of this, like, you need someone else to complete you. And the better you are with yourself, the more able you are to be fully present in a relationship. I think if you're going to write really good relationships, you should have been in some really bad relationships, and you should have been in at least one really great one.
Right.
Because that reminds you of what's real. I mean, I do try, as much as the books are light and they're really designed to get you through a lazy Sunday or a plane ride or while you're sitting at your kid's soccer game, I want them to feel real, and I want the people to feel real. And that means they have to be flawed. They have to be flawed, hopefully, in interesting ways that aren't overly annoying. And the romantic arc has to be believable. And you have to want them to end up together for the right reasons.
Right. You said before in the break about you don't like to write happy endings. You like to write hopeful endings. What does that mean?
Well, I think to me, a happy ending is very pat. It feels that everything's tied up in a bow. You know exactly, you know, you could put a pin in it and never go back to it ever again. I like to believe that my heroines end the books in a better place than when they started, and that the reader believes that they're going to be okay, whether the relationship that they're in is the relationship or just a relationship, they're going to come out of it fine. Whether the job that they've just accepted is the perfect job or is just the right job for right now, mm-hmm. that whatever it is, that they're on the right happy path, which to me is different than sort of a happy ending, which is everything tied up in a bow. I mean, the funniest story went, so this book started with the title, and it was not my title. And you read some of my titles. My titles have tended to be sort of double entendre
food idioms. Right, right.
And my editor called me and she said, "You are going to write a book called Wedding Girl." And I said, "This is Stacy. Have you met me? Have you read anything I've ever written? I don't write the, you know, getting down the aisle has never really been the goal of any of my heroines." And she said, "No, you are going to write a book called Wedding Girl." And I said, "That's just not me, and it's not my brand, and it's not my content." And she said, "I'm going to tell you two pieces of information. Books with the word wedding in the title are selling very well right now. And books with the word girl in the title are selling very well right now."
Put a dog on the front. You got it.
And I said, "So I'm going to write a book called Wedding Girl. I wonder what that's going to be about."
Well, but that could be about a lot of different things.
It could be. And I needed for the content, you know, normally you would see a book called Wedding Girl and you would think this is a book about someone who is, you know, working towards marriage. And actually, I liked the idea of starting with a girl who was working towards that, mm-hmm. and has it completely blow up in her face. And now she has to figure out who she is.
And I mean, you play very well in the sort of the strength of weddings, meaning that there's a whole industry surrounding it. You sort of get into it. She opens up a website, Wedding Girl, where she takes, for a fee, you can ask her questions. As opposed to getting a wedding planner, you can just ask her questions. And she's really good at, I mean, the fun part of it is she had a broken wedding, but she's really good at planning weddings.
Yeah.
And that's a great sort of, that also adds to the sort of giving up on one dream and adding to another or starting another one, which is what we talked about a little bit earlier.
Well, and it's a very human thing. I think for all of us, we have aspects of our life where we give really, really good advice to our friends and family, and we are really bad at it ourselves. Or we have friends who always give the best relationship advice or the clearest, you know, sage wisdom about how other people should live their lives, and their own lives are a mess. And so I like that dichotomy of, you know what? I'm gonna give advice on weddings for money, even though my own wedding was a complete disaster, and I ended up broke and homeless and jobless and living with my grandmother as a result.
The book is called Wedding Girl. For Sophie, I mean, this is a character that is really relatable in the sense that she has heartbreak right at the beginning. And you almost end up rooting for her because you want her to be able to prevail, to climb that or to sort of, you know, take on that challenge. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to walk away from a character like that? I mean, when you're done with Wedding Girl, you're like, oh, I want her to continue climbing. I mean, especially since you're not wrapping it up and you're doing hopeful endings.
Right. Yeah. I want all of my characters to continue. I always joke that every single character in every one of my books had a very complete backstory and back life. It bothers me when I read books and I find that the secondary and tertiary characters are thinly drawn. So while you may only see the other characters in the book here and there, I can tell you where they went to college. I can tell you about their first failed romance. I know everything about them as real people. So I could either write a book for any character in any one of my books, mm-hmm. or I could continue any one of my heroines' stories ad infinitum. And in fact, I have always done notes and had thoughts about sequels, anywhere from 1 to 4 sequels for any of my books. But you have to sell a lot of books for your publisher to want you to write sequels. And so the only thing that I do is my books are all one-offs. You can read them in any order. But if you read them in chronological order, every book has a tiny little nod to the heroine in the previous book.
Okay.
So you didn't read the previous book, which is Recipe for Disaster. But when she talks about Annika, who uh-huh. was her architect.
Yeah, right.
Annika was the heroine of Recipe for Disaster.
Okay,
so
okay.
you get a tiny little wink and a window into where they are now a year later.
It's also a great way to develop a loyal following for people to be able to continue to follow your work. I mean, for this character, there's so much more involved. We'll talk about it after the news here. With Chicago, mm-hmm. and it takes place here in Chicago, with the food scene. There's so much inside. It's interesting to me because it's just blown up the culinary industry in this town, and it sort of plays a character in your book. There's so much more. Stacey Ballas is the author of Wedding Girl. It's her 9th novel. You can get it now. It just came out this May. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download after the news. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Thanks, Rob. Justin Kaufman here till 11 o'clock. My guest tonight at the big table, Stacey Ballas, her new novel, Wedding Girl, just came out this month to coincide with your anniversary.
Yes,
your
it did.
5-year anniversary.
5-year anniversary.
Let's talk about another character in this novel, Chicago.
Yeah.
Plays a big part, not just obviously what we mentioned, the sort of clamor over the restaurant scene and the sort of what we know to be the culinary industry, but about location. I mean, this kind of takes place in old Chicago.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and I know this, we're Chicagoans. Chicago is a city of neighborhoods, and each neighborhood has its own flavor and its own personality, and it's one of the things that's so great about this city, and something that I've always appreciated growing up here. So Chicago is another character in all of my books. It's really important to me to highlight and celebrate everything that this city is about, not just from the food scene, but from a people scene and cultural. And for this book, it was really kind of important for her to go back to that kind of old school neighborhood place that has nostalgia but has a comfort and a safety.
Well, she's in a world, a pastry chef world, where she's working at Michelin star restaurants. It's a different kind of Chicago.
Right.
And when she has to go back and live with her grandmother, she gets a part-time job at Langer's, which is the bakery.
Exactly.
It's
the local neighborhood bakery.
It's the local bakery. It's everything. I mean, it's Dinkles. It's Lutz's. It's
exactly.
It's the Chicago bakery.
It's the Chicago, probably Jewish bakery.
Right.
That's right. And to me, that's that thing of you kind of have to go back to the beginning, right? She's had all this stuff in her life that's completely exploded, her life, her job, her relationship. And you got to get back to brass tacks when that happens. You got to go where you're comfortable and where you're safe and start from a strong foundation. And I think, you know, Chicago neighborhoods have always been about family and community.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I grew up. That's how my parents grew up. That's how my grandparents grew up. That's how my great-grandparents grew up. And so to highlight and celebrate that, I think it's really different here than it is almost anywhere else, and that it's not just cultural and it's not just socioeconomic, that it really is about a flavor of a neighborhood and how that neighborhood community, I mean, we have such strong community activism within the communities. Like, you go to any neighborhood in Chicago, there's a little newsletter and there's a little preservation society and there's its own little chamber of commerce, and there's all that stuff that's just for that neighborhood, and the neighborhood could be really small. And so I think celebrating that aspect of Chicago, because it's not the aspect that you see in movies or on TV or usually celebrated in books.
Or it's hard. It's very hard to capture. I mean, that spirit, you know, because it, because, you know, an old bakery looks like an old bakery. It could be look like it's on a set in a Hollywood film. But there's something about the character that Chicago is in this book that really relates. And that's I think, the when we talk about the grandmother's Bubbles, her building.
Yeah.
That's the big part of, like, that's a big part of
the house she grew up in.
Right. So, I mean, do you have, when you write like that, do you have a building in mind? Do you know exactly where that is in Chicago?
I do. And let me be clear. I'm a really lazy writer. I mean, you've read the book. My books take place right now in the city in which I live, usually either in the neighborhood where I live now or a neighborhood I've lived in before. Sometimes they live in my house. They go to the restaurants I eat at. They shop at the stores that I shop at. I mean, I really am not interested in spending a whole lot of time doing research, because that takes a lot of time.
But there's some authenticity in that.
But I, you know, they say write what you know. I really write what I know. And so when I talk about Bubbles and her old neighborhood, I know where that is. And when we talk about, oh, driving by and going to see Bubbles' house where she grew up, I'm thinking about the house where my grandmother grew up. I've got images in my head where my dad grew up. Like, I know where all those places are. And so I just am trying to capture them in a way that someone who's never been here starts to get a sense of how the neighborhoods work. That, to me, is sort of, it's the interesting part of Chicago that you don't often get
to see. Is it hard to write that knowing that someone who's not from here is going to read it? Meaning, I mean, is it hard to explain, to sort of capture that magic that is a Chicago neighborhood?
I have to find a balance of not over-explaining and just hoping that someone who's in New York that is reading this is going, oh, that sounds like when I used to go visit my grandmother in Queens. Or, you know, someone who's in Boston is going, oh, that's kind of like when I used to go visit my aunt and uncle who lived, you know, out in Brookline, or whatever it is. Like, someone who's going to figure out that nostalgia piece and relate it to something for themselves. And, you know, I try to write as much as possible in a way that someone who's from here gets it as being totally authentic and real, and someone who's not from here understands that Chicago is an interesting place and you should come hang out.
Stacey Ballas, the book is Wedding Girl. Stacey, who's reading this book? That's what I want to know. I mean, because I loved it, and I felt like I was kind of one of the reasons maybe I loved it was because I was peeking in on it. Like maybe it was something I wasn't ever going
to
see. And then I saw it and I was like, why am I choking up? What's Mark doing? I was like, so who is reading?
Well, you know, look, there's no question that probably 85% of my demographic are women from, and I do get a pretty broad range. I mean, I do get women in their sort of mid-20s through their 60s and 70s. I write contemporary women's fiction, or what they're calling me now, foodie fiction. So I write contemporary women's fiction where food and eating and cooking is another character in the book.
So foodie fiction is a thing? Like, that's a...
Foodie fiction is a thing.
That's pioneer.
That is an official genre. I don't think I'm a pioneer. I think MFK Fisher and Julia Child and some other people were pioneers, but I'm happy to be in the mold for the moment. But yeah, so most of my readers are women. I have a small group of gay men who also appreciate and love what I write. But I have this tiny little core, like maybe 2-3% of normal, everyday straight guys who like my work. And I always say...
Present.
Thank you. And I always say they usually come to my work because their wife or their girlfriend or someone left it in a bathroom. But what they figure out quickly is that, number one, I write funny, which is universal. And number two, the straight guys that read me go, I never realized that if I really want to know about women and how they think and what they want and how they engage in relationships and what they're looking for in a guy, I should read this kind of stuff because it's like peeking behind the curtain.
Do you feel like that's part of what you write? I mean, is sort of an inside glimpse into what women want?
I think I write in, I try to write an inside glimpse and not so much into what women want, but actually who they are. I think one of the things about writing first person narrative is that you are seeing this character through her own filter. She is telling you who she is, and you're getting to know her very intimately. And that that's important to me. And it's one of the reasons that even though I write very lighthearted, funny books, there's other messages that are woven in that I don't think necessarily come through in other books like mine. I write a lot about size positivity and women who are very normal average size for women in this country, which is size 14 or larger. And they are not spending an entire book wondering about the size of their butt or whether they look good in these pants. And they don't ever think that any lack of success in life or in relationships has anything to do with their weight. Their weight is a non-issue for them. They just happen to be bigger girls. And that to me is a really important thing to put out there. So trying to get those little glimpses behind the curtain into how women really think and how they think about themselves and what they worry about and what really gives them anxiety, which I think is often glossed over in other works of fiction. I think that's fascinating to guys in the same way that I like to read Nick Hornby, because I get that same little peek, you know, behind the curtain with his male characters.
Stacey Ballas is my guest tonight at the big table. She wrote the new novel, Wedding Girl, which just came out this May. When we return, let's talk about the how you write. Because I'm as fascinated to the fact that you have nine novels since, what, 2004?
2004, first one came out.
That's amazing. All right, Stacey Ballas is my guest tonight at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Stacey Ballas. The novel is Wedding Girl, just out this month. Stacey, nine novels in, I guess, 12 years now.
Yeah.
What's your process? I mean, are you pretty much, do you have a routine to be able to crank out that kind of material in such a short amount of time?
Sort of depends on what you think of as a routine. If by routine, do you mean, do I spend the first month after I sign the contract, like patting myself on the back and say, ooh, I have a book deal. And then I write a couple chapters in a panic. And then I spend another month patting myself on the back for writing the first two chapters. And then I settle into kind of, I'll block off, so stupid. I block off time on my calendar. I have to write in big chunks. I can't, like, I know a lot of writers, they write 1,000 words a day. I have to write a chapter in sort of one big fell swoop. So I need a 4 to 5 hour chunk of time uninterrupted to sit and kind of get it out, almost stream of consciousness, and then I can go back and edit it.
Does it build up? Like, do you start to, like, oh, that would be great for this character. Oh, I'll write this down, and then you sort of, like, spill it out when you get in front
of the computer. I think I do. A lot of that just happens in my head, and then I sit down always reluctantly at the computer. I'll block off chunks of time, like maybe 3 or 4 days during the week. And if I write on one or two of them, I have been very successful because I will figure out, I do a lot of what I call procrastibaking. If I'm bringing you cookies, then I am definitely under deadline. I suddenly have a desperate need to make social plans with everybody that I haven't seen in a while. So then there's lunch engagement and that breaks up the day. And now I don't possibly have enough time. And then I write. So I write about half the book like that, and then I get to where I'm at right now. So my next book is due August 1st, and I've written about a third of it.
Okay.
And so now in the next 10 weeks, I have to, like, panic and get the rest of the book.
How long does it take to write a book for you?
It usually takes me a total of around 9 months. So I write a book a year. It takes me about 9 months of sort of active working on the book, writing something. There's chunks of time when the book is out of my hands for editing and that kind of thing. So I'm not being active. I'm just thinking about it. But it takes about 9 months to get a draft done. And then it goes through a very long edit process. So the book that's for me that's due August 1st will be out the beginning of next May. And it will take from August 1st till the following May to get it edited and copy edited and
Now, Stacey, I mean, there are authors out there, that, and we've had them on the show, where they will publish independently or they'll self-publish in some form. I mean, this is, I mean, you are in the system. I mean, you get Penguin to publish your stuff. Was this a subsidiary kind of thing?
Yeah, Berkeley? The Berkeley Group is an imprint under Penguin Random
right.
House.
So, I mean, you must have seen the industry change in the last dozen years of being a writer and being and publishing work, nine novels. It's drastically changing.
My first two books, which are currently out of print, were never made available digitally. You can't get them for Kindle because it didn't exist when I published them. So the way people publish and the way that people read has changed enormously just in the time that I've been doing it. And I think some for the good and some not. I think the ability now for people to publish independently and to self-publish is extraordinary. And that you can really take it seriously and be taken seriously is unbelievable. When I first started, everything that was self-publishing was referred to within the industry as vanity press. And if you published your own material, no major publishing house would ever look at you ever again for anything in the future. And that's really changed. And a lot of artists are taking control of their own work. The ones who are being successful are giving it the same kind of attention that the big publishing houses do. So they are hiring independent editors, independent copy editors.
That's really that's the strength of having a publisher. When it comes with an editor, it comes with all the kind of things that you need to support you as a writer.
The book, for me, doesn't happen until the edits. I mean, I know what I meant when I wrote the first draft, but it doesn't hang together as a real story. And things change significantly during the editing process because I'm too close to my own work to know what it needs to be to get into a stranger's hands and have them respond to it. So I always think of my editor as my partner in this. We are making the book together. And then the copy editor goes through and finds all the stupid spelling mistakes and the bad grammar, because for someone who was an English teacher, I'm really terrible at all of that. And the art department figures out the cover, and the marketing department figures out how to get it into the right hands, and my publicist figures out how to send you a copy of the book
right. So
we can be here to talk about it. That is all stuff that can be done by someone on their own that I have no interest in.
For you, I mean, obviously, you're a full-time writer to be able to do this. You know, the golden question is, are you making a living as a writer? I mean, to be able to publish in this way with such support, and this is major publishing, Penguin, everything about it is, you know, like you said, you have all this sort of support. I mean, is there a living to be made in publishing novels?
There is the same living to be made publishing novels as there is in being a full-time theater actor in Chicago or a working musician. There is a tiny, tiny percentage of people who will take that artistry and make all the money.
Right.
But yes, it is possible to support yourself as long as you are not interested in a particularly lavish lifestyle. I published my first four books while I was working full-time. And working a big job and 60, 70 hours a week. And it wasn't until I got to a place where I realized I was never going to know what I could be as a writer unless I did it full time and I was in a position to leave. But even then, it was because my overhead was very low and I took an enormous pay cut in order to do this full time. And I'm incredibly blessed in that I'm in a marriage and in a dual income household where the person I'm married to is not a working artist. He's a civilian. Yeah. And so things like health insurance are luckily provided for
me. I don't know what this is about our society, that I automatically, and I have a ton of friends like this too, artists who are theater, like you mentioned, or people who are on television even, or people who write books, where, you know, to be able to write nine novels, I'm like, man, why don't you ever invite me over to your mansion? Why does Stacey ever invite me to her cool pool?
Why don't I send you my plane to pick you up? Yeah,
Stacey's got a plane.
Right.
Like, it's just, I don't know if something in our society that makes us think because you are accomplished, because you're prolific, because you get great reviews, that you should be making more money than all of us.
Yeah, there is that presumption. And I will tell you, in the same way that you will go to see a play and you see somebody starring in the play at Goodman Theater and you think, oh, they've really made it. They're probably also teaching. They may work a day job when they're in between gigs, and they're worried constantly about getting enough weeks for insurance. And it's the same. I know very few full-time writers who are able to support themselves entirely without either a spouse or a partner, that they're in a dual income situation, or without doing things. I mean, I know plenty of people, they'll have roommates, they do freelance work, they teach, you do all this other stuff. Until I got remarried, I did a ton of freelance. I was writing copy for other people's websites. I was writing, you know, I wrote some guy's father of the bride toast for his daughter's wedding for money. Like, I would write anything for money. And I was very fortunate that when we got married, my husband said to me, you know, this is what you do. And every minute that you spend hustling other freelance work to try to bring income in, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that's not going to make you a better novelist. To write these other people's website copy is not going to make you a better novelist. So just focus on that and I'll cover health insurance. And I went, okay, that seems like a good plan.
Last question for you. I'm interested in what's next, because you mentioned, you know, you got a book due on August 1st. Do you see yourself writing in this genre, in this sort of foodie fiction drama or genre for the near future, the long term? Like, do you see yourself branching out? What's next for Stacey Bowles?
Well, the book that I'm working on right now is foodie fiction once again. And I certainly think that there's still more to say in the genre. It's just now starting to really kind of explode. There's some other books, and there's some books that are getting big attention, and movies like Chef and The 100-Foot Journey. Like, food is really in a great place right now. So I can certainly see myself continuing this for the foreseeable future. There's other stuff that interests me. But the great thing about writing is that I can do that simultaneously. So I have a thriller project that I'm excited about and interesting with and kind of dabbling with. I've got a young adult piece that I'm talking to a friend that we may do together. I've always wanted to do some nonfiction sort of humor, memoir, essay kind of stuff. The thing you have to be careful about is you spend all of this time and energy and effort, as does your publisher, building an audience that trusts you. And so you have to be careful about going too far off brand or off genre, because they won't necessarily take that journey with you. So I'd like to do all kinds of stuff. I wrote a cookbook. I'd like to do another one, because obviously that's...
Well, we look forward to it. You got a fan here. I will follow you into whatever genre you go.
Thank you.
Stacey Bowles is the author of The Wedding Girl, a novel which is just out this month on Berkeley Press. This is her ninth novel, and she's got another one that's due on August 1st, but we ain't going to see it till next year.
You're not going to see it till next May.
Stacey, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Dustin.